couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Mortal Kombat, Stowaway, The Boys from County Hell, Shadow and Bone, and Frank of Ireland. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Death Becomes Her. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The big piece of news I want to cover this week is the Oscars. I'm going to give you my predictions. And you have this asked every year. People say, well, you know, the Oscar-nominated films didn't make much money, and you can throw out low box office, and that's true. If you just look at the best picture, The Father, Judas and the Black Messiah, Mank, Minari, Nomadland, Promising Young Woman, The Sound of Metal, and The Trial of the Chicago 7. The box office of all of those is actually really dismal. But you got to remember that 2020 was really dismal for box office. And a lot of these movies, some of these didn't even come out in theaters, except for very, very limited qualifying runs. Like Mank, The Trial of the Chicago 7, and The Sound of Metal all were an exclusive online event. And then you had other ones like Judas and the Black Messiah, for example, that did a day-and-date thing with HBO Max and in theaters. So a lot of these films, you can't judge by how much it actually made ticket sales, because that's not where a lot of these movies came from. But as I do, when it comes time to talk about my Oscar nominations, I like to talk about the big six, the best actor and actress, and then the supporting categories, as well as best director and best picture. So let's start with the best supporting categories, what my predictions are. With the best actress in a supporting role, you've got Maria Makalova for Borat, subsequent movie film, Glenn Close for Hillbilly Elegy, Olivia Colman for The Father, Amanda Seyfried for Mank, and Yoo Jong-yeon for Minari. Now, this one I think is pretty sewn up for Yoo Jong-yeon for Minari, because not only did she do a great job, but I don't think Minari is going to take home a lot of awards. But this one I think people are going to really zero in on. As much as, I mean, I love Olivia Colman, but she just won recently for The Favorite, so I don't think she's going to win for The Father. Of course, Glenn Close also got nominated for a Razzie, I think. So as good as she was in a mediocre film of Hillbilly Elegy, I still don't think it's enough to get past Minari. Now, when it comes to actor and supporting role, you've got Sacha Baron Cohen for The Trial of the Chicago 7. You've got Daniel Kaluuya for Judas and the Black Messiah, Leslie Odom Jr. for One Night in Miami, Paul Raci for Sound of Metal, and Lakeith Stanfield for Judas and the Black Messiah. Now, as much as I think having two people from the same movie will split the vote, I think that Lakeith Stanfield is going to take this home. But I think it's really kind of up in the air for almost anybody. Now, when it comes to best actress, you've got Viola Davis for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Andra Day for The United States versus Billie Holiday, Vanessa Kirby for Pieces of a Woman, Frances McDormand for Nomadland, and Carey Mulligan for Promising Young Woman. I think this one's probably the one that's most up in the air. There's some you can rule out. For example, I really don't think that Andra Day or Vanessa Kirby are going to win. As good as their performances are, they just don't have the buzz behind them. I mean, Vanessa Kirby had buzz right at the beginning when it came out. The Pieces of the Woman as a movie did not hold up and have that staying power that, say, something like Nomadland has. And I think Nomadland is got a lot of power, and the Academy loves it. So I think that Frances McDormand is going to win. But boy, I would not be surprised if Viola Davis won, or even Carey Mulligan. I think those three are sort of in this, you know, photo finish. But I'd put my money behind Frances McDormand. Now, for best actor in a leading role, this is the one I think is all sewn up. There's certain very specific reasons behind it. But you've got Riz Ahmed for Sound of Metal. You've got Chadwick Boseman for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Anthony Hopkins for The Father. Gary Oldman for Mank. And Steven Yeun for Minari. This is going to Chadwick Boseman. I think that is a surefire thing, mainly because of the circumstances surrounding it. You had this beloved actor who was in the prime of his career die, at least to the public, very suddenly, even though he knew what was going on with his life. as much as I thought he was good in The Five Bloods, he has did a better acting job in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, and I he's just been cleaning up this year. So I think that one's a shoo-in, and you're not going to beat the momentum behind Chadwick Boseman on this one. Now, it's kind of hard to talk about Best Picture and Best Director without kind of talking about them at the same time, and they have different lists of nominees. I think what's interesting is there are four films that cross: David Fincher for Mank, Lee Isaac Chung for Minari, Chloe Zhao for Nomadland, and Emerald Fennell for Promising Young Woman. Those are both director and pictures. So I think when it comes to Best Director, Thomas Vinterberg, for Another Round, as much as that movie's getting a lot of buzz, and it's probably going to win Best International Feature, I just don't see him being able to walk away with Best Director. And that's kind of the same thing with something like The Father or Judas and the Black Messiah or The Sound of Metal being Best Picture. I don't see those winning those without the Best Director on hand. My money is on Chloe Zhao and Nomadland to pick up both. But here's the thing. This is the tipping point. Never underestimate how much Hollywood loves itself. And there is a chance, an outside chance, but there is a chance that they'll give it to Mank and David Fincher for Mank, because it's a movie about Hollywood. And the reason that would be so significant is because that's a Netflix film. And that would be the first time a pure streaming movie won. Now, I still think Nomadland is going to walk away with it for both. But this would be an interesting thing if it happened. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer I want to talk about is The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It, in theaters and on HBO Max on June 4th.
Residents of Brookfield were shocked this afternoon by the broad daylight murder of Bruno Sauls.
The court accepts the existence of God every time a witness swears to tell the truth. I think it's about time they accept the existence of the devil.
Whatever was going on, whatever happened that day, that was not Arnie.
I actually was lucky enough for my screening of Mortal Kombat. I got a chance to see this trailer. They played it in front of it. So it actually released the trailer. I got to see it before it was officially released on Thursday. And I got to say, this looks really good. It looks creepy as all get out. And it looks like they're really making it for the big screen. I mean, Warner Brothers has a great slate of movies that are worth seeing on the big screen, along with stuff like Suicide Squad. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that they're really pushing to get people back in theaters, but of course you've got it on HBO Max. I'm looking forward to the Conjuring series. I've liked that. I've liked a lot of the offshoots of the Conjuring series. Some aren't as good as others, but the Conjuring is the backbone. It looks really good. So I'm looking forward to this one. The next one I want to talk about is Ted Lasso Season 2, which comes to Apple TV Plus on July 23rd.
Howdy, y'all.
Ted! What do you say to a cocktail, Coach Lasso?
Oh, the same thing I'd say to Diane Sawyer if she ever asked me out on a date. Yes, please.
Live from the dog track, it's Richmond with 8 straight ties.
How many more matches before you hit the panic button?
There's two buttons I never like hitting. That's panic and snooze.
I don't care what our record is.
It's all about believing that everything's going to work out in the end.
Exactly as it's supposed to.
And isn't the idea of never give up one of them things we always talk about in sports? And shouldn't that apply to people too?
This was the little show that could. It was the show on Apple TV Plus that people weren't thinking was going to be a big deal, but it became a phenomenon. It became the show that people know Apple TV Plus for. Not stuff like The Morning Show. This was a big hit. Everyone loved it. Jason Sudeikis won the Golden Globe. And it's great to see it coming back because it's got such a great heart. And my family watches it. This is one of the few shows we still watch as a whole family, all five of us. And it's just such a great series. It's worth checking out. I can't wait to dive into new Ted Lasso episodes in July. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Frank of Ireland and the Boys from County Hell.
We'll be right back.
Buckeyes at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's take a trip. And that trip is going to be to Ireland. We're going to go to the Emerald Isle and talk about some of the movies and TV series that are coming out of Ireland, both Northern Ireland and Ireland, the Republic of Ireland. The first one I want to talk about is Frank of Ireland, which is on Amazon Prime. It actually released last week. A 32-year-old Irishman struggles to get his life together when his mother threatens to throw him out.
Happy birthday, Frank.
What's going on?
This is an intervention, Frank.
My birthday present's an intervention.
You're stuck in a cycle, Frank. You have to find your own place to live, Frank.
This is my house. I have to defend it. It's like home alone. I love you, Frank. You're one of my best friends.
You still want to do the flaming bag of dog poo on his doorstep?
It's a little unsophisticated, but yes, please.
What I find fascinating about this television series, and it's only 6 episodes, which is very typical for something that comes out British Isles. This has a premise that we see all over the place. The guy in his 30s who can't get his act together, who's a slob, and he doesn't know how to move on and actually grow up an adult. He doesn't have a regular job. He can't even drive. He's got a girlfriend that he keeps going back to, and she's kind of a hot mess too, and he's stuck in this rut. He's got a best friend that always helps him out. But this one just happens to be the Irish version of it. I mean, we have a dozen of these shows on television in the States here, either on cable or you know, like just a sitcom on a regular broadcast or even on some of the streaming services. It's a universal thing, I think, for people in this generation. And it makes for a fun show. Now, the Gleasons are involved in this. Brendan Gleeson, most people will recognize as Mad-Eye Moody from the Harry Potter films. His sons, Brian and Donald, are in this. Brian plays Frank, who is the ne'er-do-well who's flopping around Dublin trying to get his act together. And Donald Gleeson plays his best friend, Doofus, which is such an accurate title of the name. You recognize Domhnall Gleeson from being, he was in the Peter Rabbit movies, he was in About Time, he was in Star Wars, he played General Hux, the guy in charge of the Star Destroyers, the redhead guy. And they're both very funny in it. And then Brendan Gleeson shows up as Frank's father at some time. And this is very, very Irish. I mean, it's the universal themes of a guy trying to get his act together and not wanting to grow up. But it's also just steeped in Irishness. And I mean, it has all these very thick Irish names like Parrick and Anya and Queven, which are, you know, that's Patrick, Anne, and Kevin, but the Irish version of them. But then they have people like Frank and Mary, which are, and then Doofus. I don't know who's, what country that comes from. But it's that darker humor that Irish content has. It's still got a lilt to it, and there's a charm and there's a love, but it's also, it can be very dark and very, at times, twisted and strange, but it also, and this comes partly from the British influence, the sardonic humor to it, but it can also be very, depressing if it wasn't so beautiful in its execution. I mean, if you were to take the humor out of this, it would be the most depressing show on television. But by weaving this humor into it, and you get this with, especially that coastal European market, you know, you get this with stuff up in like Norway and the Scandinavian countries kind of have this flavor as well. But it's, there's also a real charm to it. And I found it very, very funny. And they swear like crazy in this. I'm Irish and I swear all the time. So maybe it's a genetic thing. Who knows? Anyways, I gotta say, Frank of Ireland is a charming, fun, hilarious show that also hits you in the gut sometimes. And that's what makes good TV. So I'm gonna have to say Frank of Ireland rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about another movie, and this is on Shudder. It's another halfway to Halloween movie. And this one's made in Northern Ireland, which is actually part of the United Kingdom. All the British Isles are there, but Northern Ireland is part of the United Kingdom. In The Boys from County Hell, a group of Irish construction workers find themselves facing an ancient vampire when they overturn a historic gravesite.
Some things are older than science. Older than God. The earth has its own secrets.
This land belonged to Avertag. He drained people's blood and drink it like water.
Like Dracula.
There's a vampire on my sight!
This isn't Dracula. People don't get turned from a bite. They get turned by the stones from Avertag's grave.
If Avertag binges all night, the whole town's gonna be dead.
This also has a lot of swearing in it too, and it was a pain in the arse to cut that trailer because there was so much swearing I had to cut out of it. But it actually tells the story of Avertag, who is a ancient Irish vampire, basically. It comes from Irish legend. And Bram Stoker, if you don't know, he was Irish. He was actually from Dublin. But there's a competing theories that, you know, the most popular one that Bram Stoker created Dracula based on Vlad the Impaler, you know, this Romanian prince who was brutal and mean and horrible and even went by the name Dracul, you know, son of the devil, basically. And then there's an alternate theory that Bram Stoker based Dracula on Avertag, who's this ancient, well, he was in some lore, he's a dwarf that was immortal, but then he has the vampire things where he drinks blood and stuff. And so they play off of that, and it's basically unleashing this Irish vampire. Because it's supposedly in this town, this is a place where Bram Stoker once stayed. And they have a pub in town called The Stoker, where this group of kids and or young adults go and they get drunk and they mess around with tourists. But it's really kind of fresh and, but again, it's dark. I mean, it's a horror movie. It is a through and through horror movie, but it does have that humorous edge to it. If you remember, maybe not as on the nose humorous as something like Shaun of the Dead, you know, of course, which is British, but the horror elements to the Shaun of the Dead series remind me a lot of this. It also has this weird connection to the League of Gentlemen. If you ever watched that show, which is a British show in this fictitious town of Royston Vasey, in which there's like this mysterious nosebleeds happening and everybody's strange and there's serial killers who live there and people trying to travel, making a road through town, which is sort of kicks off that series. And that also kicks off this, where they're basically making a road through this area where this vampire is buried. But it is one of those small town vampire stories, and it has a lot of humor to it, very sardonic and dark humor, but it works. I will tell you this, use your subtitles because everybody's got a very thick accent, and you'll be able to understand it better, because boy, it goes fast sometimes with what they say, and you really have to concentrate to get through the brogue. But it's actually really fresh, and it has some really interesting stuff in there with the vampire and how they make the vampire work that is different and unique. And that's really tough to do in this day and age with so many vampire stories out there. They actually managed to do some stuff that's unique and different and fresh and give a new spin on the genre. So bravo, guys. I thought the Boys from County Hell totally rocked.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Mortal Kombat and Stowaway. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Portal Wombats. We are going to be talking about, of course, Mortal Kombat, which is it's not a remake, it's a reboot, because they did a movie back in the mid-90s. Paul W.S. Anderson, who's best known for doing the Resident Evil movies, he did Mortal Kombat back then, and then there was a sequel like a year or two later, it wasn't very long, called Mortal Kombat Annihilation. Now, I also want to point out here, I don't game. I'm not a big gamer. I mean, to me, like, Dig Dug and Donkey Kong was probably the height of my gaming. I mean, I'll sit there, my kids tried to get me to do, like, Smash Brothers or Mario Kart. I get annoyed because there's just too much stuff. And wait, I mean, 5,000 buttons on these controllers. Give me the good old-fashioned joystick and one or two buttons, and it's about my speed. So I never played Mortal Kombat, but one of the things I know about Mortal Kombat is it's very, very violent, the video game is. And I know a lot of people were kind of cheesed off back in the 90s when they did a PG-13 version of it. Because it was known for ripping people's heads off and tearing out people's hearts and disemboweling them and dismembering them in the service. And then there's even the whole thing where the guy yells, finish him, and you're supposed to finish it. They have a finishing move that's always very violent. And going back and watching the movie from the 90s, it reeks of the 90s. I mean, that thing just reeks of the 90s. And it seems to work in a 90s action movie sense, but it's really a dumb movie. The original is. It's dumb. Mortal Kombat at least has a background story that you can put a script onto. And it's an okay script. I think that Paul W.S. Anderson did a better job with the original Resident Evil movie, making that work as a story, than he did Mortal Kombat. The problem that's always plagued video game movies is video games are premise-based, and then you play in an open-ended universe, whereas movies are plot-driven and character-driven, and you got to have it go somewhere, and it's not open-ended. It needs to be tighter reined in. So they're very two different types of structure in terms of putting together a movie. Mortal Kombat bases itself on just the premise of getting to this tournament where it's this interdimensional tournament, and if you win it 10 times, you can invade other realms, and the people from the Dark World have won it 9 times, but they're cheating, so they can do it a 10th time, and then they can invade, and so you've got this ragtag group of strangers who kind of come together and find themselves as chosen ones to be in the contest to fight them. And I don't think they ever really go to the actual contest itself in this one. They just have to fight because the bad guys are cheating. But it's just a MacGuffin. It's just an excuse to get everybody together so they can beat the crap out of each other.
It's not a birthmark, Cole. It means you've been chosen.
Throughout history, different cultures all over the world reference a great tournament of champions. That dragon marking?
I think it's an invitation to fight for something known as Mortal Kombat.
What's interesting is it starts off with, you know, it actually has a story to it. They worked to put a story. It's not a great story. I mean, this isn't Shakespeare. This is a very basic seeking power and revenge type story. And with that said, it works. It manages to make it interesting enough to string together the action sequences, and they spread those around, whereas like in the original, they kind of crammed all these like combat moves into like one montage, and that just kind of felt lame. They have some violence in the beginning, but boy, about halfway through the movie, it starts to get gross. And that's what people want in a Mortal Kombat movie. You got people being disemboweled and heads being ripped open and cut in half and everything. It is definitively R-rated violence. And that's important for the fans of the game. I mean, it's not trying to be something it's not. It's giving into what people like about Mortal Kombat the game. And in that sense, I applaud it. I mean, at least it's giving the people what they want. It's staying true to the original source material. It played well. I enjoyed it. So I'm going to have to say Mortal Kombat kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Stowaway. This is on Netflix. It actually dropped on Thursday. A small crew on a 2-year mission to Mars discover a technician who has accidentally been left on the ship after takeoff.
Hi, Michael. I'm Marina Bunnett, the commander of the ship. Do you remember what happened on the pad?
How long was I out?
We took off about 12 hours ago.
I need to get back to my sister, please. My sister, she's alone, please. I gotta get back.
We're not going back.
What do you mean we're not going back? This is a 2-year mission.
There's no easy way to say this. Life support is damaged permanently. We only have enough oxygen board for 3 people.
First off, I want to say that I am kind of a sucker for this kind of movie. I like the idea of people stuck on a spaceship trying to survive. There have been a lot of movies like that. And I'm really drawn to them because I'm fascinated with the idea of being so alone in space. This is also very similar to people crash landing a plane. This is also very similar to people being shipwrecked on a desert island. Those are less interesting to me. I love the idea of the space thing. And I talked about that with Voyagers. Plus, this has a great cast. It's got Anna Kendrick. It's got Toni Collette. It's got Daniel Day-Kim as the three people on this mission. And then there's this new guy who shows up. And, you know, when you see the trailer and you're watching the movie, you're wondering, is there going to be anything nefarious? Is this guy stowed away to sabotage things? And I'm just going to say, and I don't think this is spoilery to say, it's a legitimate accident, but now he's stuck on a 2-year mission. And the big struggle in this one is they're like, this mission was designed for 3 people. We don't have the resources for 4 people for 2 years. And it's them having to look at some real situations and some real challenges and some real decisions that they have to make. And as much as I like the concept of them, I love the way they put it together, and it looks beautiful and it's fantastic. And there's some harrowing scenes in there where they're on the outside of the spaceship having to do something, and you really get this sense of the void you're in. And if you lose something, it's gone forever because it's going out into a vacuum billions and billions and billions of light years in all directions. But the problem with this movie is there's so many points in here where I found myself going, well, why did they make that this way? For example, the way they get gravity on this ship is they take their booster rocket and they tie it to a tether on the other side of their solar panels as a counterweight so they can spin this whole thing, and then they get artificial gravity by the spin. And they can climb up to the solar panel eventually if they need to climb to the booster rocket. But they have this the most insanely low-rent contraption. It's just like these little clamps, and it looks like it's impossible to climb up. And I'm like, well, I understand you not needing to get to the booster rocket, but at some point in 2 years, you might need to go fix something on the solar panels. I mean, why didn't they have some mechanical thing that allowed you to go up there? Why did you have to do this cumbersome thing to climb up with? It wouldn't have been any bigger. And like the thing that really sort of sets this off is that in the process of where he had fallen and he had gotten injured, and that's how he had passed out on the ship, he had broken something from the life support. And you're like, I mean, it's the size of a kid's lunchbox. And you're like, you did this thing's so critical. You didn't think to have at least a spare somewhere? Or some way to repair it. You know, you put all your faith on one gadget. What if it just burns out? Now, they sort of swerve into a discussion of this where they said, well, there were supposed to only be 2 people, but they needed 3. So they really kind of stretched the resources. And it sounds like this was a private mission where the company behind it was trying to cut some costs, which is different than something like NASA, whereas NASA doubles up on their redundancies for safety. And I could see this trying to make a point of saying, if you were to move space travel to privatizing it, you are looking at people trying to cut corners and making the money work rather than being safety 100% first. But it never makes that point. I mean, you don't need Neil deGrasse Tyson on Twitter explaining all the nuances of space travel to find the holes in this script. And you don't want holes on a spaceship that's like a screen door at this point. And the thing is, it's not like there's just one. There's like a dozen of them where I'm like, well, why don't they do this? Why couldn't they do this? This would have been something they could have at least foreseen. What if this happens? What if, where's the repair for this? And how did the guy even get left there? They didn't even do a good explanation of that. So I think there's a lot of stuff they ignored in explanations that they expect you to take. But, you know, after so much of it, I couldn't take it all. So, unfortunately, I'm going to have to say that Stowaway kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Shadow and Bone and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Death Becomes You. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and do the final one, which is actually a TV show. Let's talk about Shadow and Bone. This Netflix series follows a gifted young woman in an alternate world who discovers she has the powerful ability to harness the light of the sun.
Is this true? Can you summon light?
She's real.
Our enemies are threatened by your mere existence.
The whole world will be after you.
The prize is 1,000,000 Kruger.
Bring me Alina Starkov.
Am I a prisoner?
When Harry Potter was a big hit. All the studios kept trying to come up with their next Harry Potter. And then Twilight came around, and then everybody started doing Twilight knockoffs. You had all, everyone had a vampire story. You, of course, had, what was it? The Vampire Chronicles on the CW. And then after that, you had the Hunger Games, and then everybody was doing the Hunger Game type stories, you know, the Fifth Wave and the Maze Runner and Divergent. The Hunger Games burned out, and they tried to continue Divergent, and Divergent finally burned out to the point that they never made the final movie. There have been so many of these books and series written, they had to find a place to go. And I've realized that they found their way to Netflix. Netflix, if you look at its content, and one of the things it pushes with its content is it's really trying to capture that tween, teen, young adult audience. I think Amazon Prime is going for a little bit older, and Hulu goes for a little bit different, and Disney is going for a little bit different. Every streaming service is trying to narrow down their own demographic. Essentially, in a lot of ways, Netflix is becoming the CW of the streaming services. And they've had multiple series like this, multiple series that are based on a book series about a ragtag group of kids. And they have to overcome something. And it's always usually like a period piece of some time, either medieval times or even like Victoria era. Like even I talked about The Irregulars a couple weeks ago, which I don't think is a terrible series. I think it's fine. But it's clearly aiming for that because there's this girl and she's the leader of everything and she's smarter beyond her years, blah, blah, blah. This series, Shadow and Bone, seems to follow that same structure. And it, to the point, it at times shamelessly steals from its predecessors. I mean, the story's about this girl, and it's kind of based on early Russian times, like sort of like Russia in the 20s, or maybe a little bit earlier. That is the feel of this movie, but it's another world. And there's this mist, this dark mist that surrounds them that they can't get through because there's creatures in it. And then there's all these different people who have these talents. Like some people can create wind, and not the way I create wind, but you know, they wave their hands and, you know, I just have to, you know, eat too many tacos. But you know, the other people, like there's one person who can create dark, and her, this main character, she can create, she's a sun summoner and she can create light. And that makes her very valuable. But I mean, it falls into that same thing where she's kind of a nobody person and she's in love with this guy that she grew up with. I mean, this sounds familiar. You know, this is the Hunger Games. But then of course she's not very remarkable, but she turns out to be the most significant person on the planet. You know, that's right out of Twilight because that's the way Bella is. So I mean, it's stealing just unabashedly from all these other things. It works fine, but I'm just getting tired of this shtick. I'm getting tired of this story being played over and over and over again. I mean, but overall, I mean, if you're a teenage girl and you want to see this series about this unremarkable teenage girl who turns out to be very remarkable, if you haven't gotten enough of that with all these other book series, you've got this one there. You know, this is no longer unique, and it's just becoming the same thing that you had. I mean, it's fine for what it is. But me, as a fat 49-year-old guy who creates his own wind, I have to say that I'll say it kind of rocks because it's for the audience, but I didn't care for it.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on an older movie. I have been taking my time during the weekends. I'll go dig through some of these streaming services I have, and relatively recently been digging into HBO Max, and I've been watching some of the stuff that they have that's either from HBO or the old Warner Brothers titles. And I found on the service Death Becomes Her, which I'd seen way back, and it was on VHS, I have to admit. I never saw it in the theaters, but I saw it in whatever, 93 when it came out on videotape. I said, well, this is something I haven't seen in so long. I might as well revisit it. And I wanted something light and fluffy to watch, so I did. In Death Becomes Her, Meryl Streep plays an aging actress who takes a potion that will cause her to never grow old, even if she dies.
A touch of magic. Drink that potion, and you'll never grow even one day older.
Bottoms up.
No warning. Now a warning? Siempre viva! Live forever! Ernest, I'm in the morgue. They think I'm dead.
You are, but you're not.
She's dead, Ernest.
I remember not liking this movie when I saw it back in the early 90s, and I have not changed my opinion on it, but I now know why I didn't like it. This movie is one of the most shallow movies I've ever seen. It is about nothing more than women trying to stay young against the God force of aging. And there is a certain redemption to some of the characters, but not really, because they're all sleazy, awful, horrible individuals. But the other thing I don't like about this movie, and as cool as the special effects are, because it was revolutionary at the time. I remember, you know, because they had the effects of Meryl Streep's head turned around and Goldie Hawn shot through the belly with a gun, and so she has this big hole in her. As cool as that looks, and as groundbreaking as those effects were back in the early 90s, they're novelties at this point. And now that's nothing new. You can do that on your home computer. The problem with the movie is I didn't like any of the characters and I couldn't relate to them. And I realized why is because this is a 100% Hollywood story. Most people in the real world, like where I live, Columbus, Ohio, yes, I know people who've had plastic surgery. And yes, I know people who've done cosmetic work. And the reality is most people just get older. I don't know if they grow old gracefully, but they accept the fact that they're growing older. And the only way you can tell somebody's not happy with how they look is because they put their kids or their dog as their Facebook picture, which happens to most of the cheerleaders in your high school who get fat when they get older. But most normal people do not have the disposable income to cut their face more than a Michael Bay movie. And so this film, it makes no sense. It's not relatable to the average person. I mean, it's absurd and silly. But in Hollywood, I can imagine when they pitch this movie, they're like, oh, it's these aging women and they're trying to stay young forever. They'll try anything and pay any amount. Oh my gosh, I know 1,000 people like that. Yeah, could you work in Hollywood? But outside of Hollywood, we only read about people like this. So I think that's part of the reason this movie just didn't click for me is because the characters aren't relatable to anyone outside of Los Angeles. And that makes the characters kind of shallow and stupid. Now, what's interesting is there's a huge resurgence of popularity on this with LGBT cinema. And I was looking into that because I'm like, I'm curious as to why. I mean, I think I know why, because part of it is they are very made up and it's all about the glam. And it's the fact that they got to go through all these horrible things and they got to do it in high heels, you know, that whole thing. I can see where this becomes appreciative, but it made me realize that there's a lot of these gay icon movies that people love now in the LGBT community, not because of what the movie was saying then. It's the camp of the movie itself. I mean, the Valley of the Dolls, people love that because of the camp. People love Showgirls, not because it's a great movie with great characters, but because it is so over the top and so ridiculous. The movie itself is a drag queen. The movie has so much makeup on itself, you can't even see the foundation. So that's the way Showgirls is. And I think that that's the same thing with Mommy Dearest. I mean, I don't think anyone loves that movie because Joan Crawford's character is such a wonderful person. So I think that's kind of one of the things. I can see the flamboyance and the attraction with this movie. But, you know, it's still, when you just look at it as just a movie outside of that, I got to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
Other releases this week on DVD and Blu-ray include Memories of a Murder in Criterion, The Furies in Criterion, and new Blu-ray releases of Dave Chappelle's Block Party, The Mortuary Collection, Switchblade Sisters, Annie Get Your Gun, Chariots of Fire, and Dr. X. And that's it for this week. I gotta go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Separation and the Mitchells versus the Machines. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.